Go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hi, and welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott Benjamin.
And I am Ben Bullitt.
Ben, we've got a listener suggestion today that was too good to ignore.
Yeah, this is a really good one. Not that all of them aren't really good, but this one stood out for us.
It really did. This one comes from Martin Sikorsky. And Martin is a listener who contacted us via Facebook. And I'll just kind of read through quickly here his Facebook post that alerted us to this topic. It says, "Gents, I listened to your podcast on my way to work at the Museum of Science and Industry in Chicago."
So cool.
Very cool. And we recently celebrated 80 years, and they brought out some rare items. And he's been posting some photos on our Facebook page with those rare photos. And I'll tell you in just a moment what a couple of those are. But
yeah.
Mentions that he listens to a lot of the How Stuff Works family of podcasts, and it's funny to him how we mention a lot of the things that they have on display at the Museum of Science and Industry. And that, you know, like the Apollo capsule, the mm-hmm. Enigma machine, farm mm-hmm. tractors, things like that, plastinated body parts, lots of different stuff. So it says, keep up the good work, and I've got two ideas. One of the ideas, which I think we're going to cover later, but I'm just kind of letting the cat out of the bag here.
Okay.
The 50th anniversary of the Mustang is coming up.
Oh,
and
he already knew.
Martin knew, and he wants us to talk about that. Now that's coming up in 2014.
Yes.
So we'll talk about that. I promise we'll get to that one. That's a good one.
We should have kept that cat bag.
The second suggestion is the luxury division known as Lincoln from the Ford Motor Company, and we thought that was a great idea. So I, replied and said we'd do that. And that's what we're going to cover today. But I wanted to also mention a couple of these photos that he sent in from the Museum of Science and mm-hmm. Industry in Chicago. One of them was like this 1947 GM synchromesh transmission. Really cool cutaway, like an engineering exercise, I guess. Shows you what's inside. A couple of airplane engines, a dive bomber engine. One of them was a Rolls-Royce Spitfire engine, which is really cool.
Wow.
And then an electric armored car from 1898 that they have on display, which is completely open top. Looks like almost like one of those vehicles that you would drive around like a shop, like an electric vehicle that you would use in a shop application, like a machine shop or something. But it has a machine gun mounted to the front. I'm sorry, just a gun mounted to the front of it. I don't know if it's a machine gun or not, mm-hmm. but completely open top, but it's supposedly an armored vehicle. Kind of a ridiculous design, but interesting nonetheless.
And now listeners can see these on our Facebook page, right?
Definitely.
That's awesome. They should check them out.
And they're from right around June, like late June.
Mm-hmm.
So take a look at that. And again, Martin, thank you. And we're going to talk about Lincoln and luxury divisions because, we've talked about this in the past that a lot of automotive companies have a luxury division, like Honda has Acura,
mm-hmm.
Nissan has Infiniti,
mm-hmm.
Toyota has Lexus, General Motors has Cadillac, and Ford Motor Company has Lincoln.
Ah, yes. And you have probably recognized, even if you're not a car person, a Lincoln vehicle in your vicinity because, let's face it, they look classy. They look polished. If we're talking about the Lincoln Town Cars, the Continental,
mm-hmm.
This is a car that makes an impression. It's a they've over time gone for building a reputation of understated elegance.
That's a good way to put that, Ben.
Thank you. Well, mm-hmm. I think it is true. But the story of Lincoln is much longer than some people might imagine. So long, in fact, that this is going to be a two-part podcast. And you and I decided we were going to do this before we hit the air.
I felt it in my bones that this is not going to work for a single episode. It would be way too long. So we're going to split it up, and we'll just kind of play it by ear here and decide when to chop it here. And we will, I promise we'll get to the second half right after this. But, the story is so long, I'll tell you, that it goes, and there's a lot of history, and don't let that scare you away because
it's all interesting.
There's some really interesting little nuggets in this story that come out that again, we talk about Henry Ford a lot.
Yeah.
We have to talk about Henry Ford early on in this thing. The whole story starts with Henry Ford in 1896.
Right. And this is a great point because this point, 1896, predates the foundation of the actual Lincoln Motor Company, but it's instrumental and it's important that we talk about this. So, Scott, could you take it away?
Yeah, just Lincoln Motor Company, doesn't come around until really 1917.
Right.
And we're going to go all the way back to 1896. You have to start with Henry Ford. And the way that these characters cross paths, it all matters in the end. You'll find out. So 1896 is when Henry Ford is working on the quadricycle, right?
Yes.
And he forms a company called the Detroit Automobile Company in about 1899. And he realizes that the early on, he himself understands that the products are a little too low quality for Ford because he has a little higher standard, I guess.
Right.
And the cost was getting too much. He said, "No, it can't cost this much. Can't be this low quality. Can't cost this much. Mm-hmm. I can't let this Detroit Automobile Company continue on. I'm going to dissolve it." And so by I think it was 1899 when he finally dissolved that company. So early on. It dissolved it in 1901.
Mm-hmm.
It was founded in 1899. So, just around for a couple of years, but not a whole lot came out of that. Well, Ford, he was pretty industrious.
Right.
He founded a second company, and he called this one the Henry Ford Company. And he founded that one in the same year that he dissolved the other company. So he formed it in 1901. And again, the Henry Ford Company was with a couple of other investors, an engineer named Harold Willis,
mm-hmm.
and a guy named William Murphy, who was this title always cracks me up. William Murphy was a Detroit lumber baron. And I don't know why that always makes me laugh. But,
because it sounds like a made-up funny job. Like, when you picture a lumber baron, it's sort of like the old railroad tycoon.
Yeah.
Is a lumber baron wearing a three-piece suit made of flannel?
Sure. With the pocket watch, through the three-piece
yeah.
suit.
He's thinking of a saw, though.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he's got a saw in hand. So anyways, Ford, like I said, he's really, really trying to push, getting these cars made. And
yes.
he's very, very driven, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So he had two car companies prior to Ford Motor Company. Now, remember we mentioned the Detroit Automobile Company,
mm-hmm.
the Henry Ford Company, which as of right now on our timeline, that's where we are. And of course, Henry is the chief engineer of the Henry Ford Company.
As
so he's got a major, major role in this thing, right? And of course, he's a major investor as well. Well, in 1902, William Murphy, that I just mentioned, the Detroit lumber baron,
mm-hmm.
he brought in a guy named Henry M. LaLand
mm-hmm.
as a consultant. And Henry LaLand, as we'll find out, has a critical role in all of this. And this time in 1902 is the first time that Henry LaLand and Henry Ford cross paths. And we'll find out that later that comes up as well. They cross paths again in their history.
Yes. So 1902, and we're still more than a decade away from Lincoln Motors, but we're starting to see the pieces come together. Now, you say LaLand and Ford will run into each other more than one time, but what's their take on each other, Scott?
Well,
how do they feel about each other?
Well, there's a little bit of friction there, and I would say a little bit, more than a little bit, because as we'll find out in just a moment, Ford actually leaves the company that has his own name, this Henry Ford Company, as a result of this meeting with LaLand, or what LaLand does to the company, because LaLand's job in 1902 was to appraise the Ford Motor Company, kind of figure out what's going wrong, like why aren't things working the way they should,
yeah.
All the tooling, the factory, mm-hmm. everything that's involved with it. Find out what's happening there, and they're talking about liquidating the factory and getting rid of all the assets and everything. So that's the situation that the Henry Ford Company was in. And of course, Henry, he's very proud of his company. Wants it to exist, continue to exist. And,
yes.
And actually, that's kind of surprising, because LaLand's advice was to them not to liquidate the factory, but to rather, keep everything that's in place, all the tooling and everything that's already there. Everything is there. He says what they should do is they should build a brand new car with a new engine that, get this, that LaLand has been working on for a company called Oldsmobile.
Yeah, see, this is where Scott, I think you were softballing it just a little, and I say that with all due respect. LaLand and Ford are enemies. They are pulling like a Scalieri Beethoven sort of thing. Yeah. They're rivals.
And Henry Ford, right? I mean, we've talked about him so many times in the past that, he's got a tremendous temper on him.
Yes.
And he really does. And it can appear out of nowhere, really.
He tore a car apart with his bare hands. One of his own cars.
He tore a prototype apart. That's right. Barehanded. So, he can fly off the handle, as we'll say, I guess, maybe.
Yeah. And, so LaLand is not, they're not collaborators.
No, no, he's not well accepted at the Henry Ford Company by Henry Ford, and so much so that you know, Ford was actually forced out of the group of investors that were led by LaLanne to kind of, you know, reinvent this company that Henry had founded.
Yeah.
So Henry founded this Henry Ford Company, and now that LaLanne is, you know, kind of come in and really, I mean, essentially taken over this factory, this tooling, you know, everything that was the Henry Ford Company. Well, LaLanne says, you know, now that we've got this new engine, we're going to build this new vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
Let's rename this whole deal and we're going to call it
Cadillac.
Exactly right. So as a strange twist in this, now I told you there are going to be these little nuggets here and there that you're going to want to pick up on. Amazingly so, Henry Ford is credited with being the founder of Cadillac Automobile Company, the original founder, because he owned the Henry Ford Company that eventually was turned into the Cadillac Automobile Company by Henry LaLanne.
Mm-hmm.
So what a strange twist, huh? I mean, if you look up Cadillac, it's right there. It's not, it's indisputable. It's there.
It's on the Cadillac website.
Exactly. So LaLanne and Henry Ford both get credit for, you know, founding this company. I guess, under the actual name of Cadillac, it's LaLanne, but Henry Ford is truly the founder of what became the Cadillac Automobile Company.
And then, who starts sniffing around the honey pot at this point? 1909, General Motors acquires Cadillac.
Yeah, and that's mainly because, and the reason that they had interest in this, now remember, it's a fairly new company.
Yeah.
All this is going down in 1902, and so between 1902 and 1909, the Cadillac standard, I'll say that it's kind of like, internationally recognized, maybe is the best way to say that.
That's a really good way to say
that. That it was garnering attention worldwide at this point for its quality, its reliability, the precision parts that they used, fit and finish, everything all the cars prior to this really didn't exhibit. I mean, there were a lot of really low quality cars coming out of some of these smaller factories, you know, that they were turning out one after the other.
And there's still a cottage industry at this point, too. So there's not quite the same standardization that Cadillac introduced. Really.
Yeah, exactly. And one of the big things about this is that one of the big things about the Cadillac Automobile Company is that it was one of the first companies, if not the first, to really focus on the interchangeability, the ease of switching parts from one vehicle to the next in the model lineups.
Yeah, so, yeah, the modular building.
That's maybe a better way to say it. This is a really big idea at the time, you know, because this is brand new, and now we see it a lot in cars that, you know, there's some carryover parts, and you can easily see what's carryover from one model to the next within a brand.
Right, and even consumables.
Yeah, at the time, in 1909, or 1902 through 1909, this was a brand new idea, and it really sold the company to General Motors, and they wanted it, and they wanted it bad, because they bought it for, get this, in 1909, $4.5 million, which is a pretty big sum. I figured this out on a inflation calculator.
Yeah, I love that you do this every time.
I try to when I can. If I see the numbers, I try to do it. So in 2013 dollars, that equals about $106 million. $106 million, a little over that. So this $4.5 million back in 1909 was a big purchase, really.
Yeah, but still, it sounds like they got it for a song.
Well, you know, when you think about 1909 car companies, it probably was a factory on a corner. It was probably one location.
That's true.
Probably one, maybe a satellite office that had, you know, the design studio or whatever they happen to have.
Maybe.
But it's not anything like what you're thinking now, where you think of, you know, these factories that occupy hundreds of acres of property and they have
global networks.
Exactly. Yeah. And robotics and all of that going on and, you know, thousands and thousands of employees. This is Cadillac in 1909. So, you know, GM for them to pick it up for $4.5 million, that's a pretty big sum. And the thing is that LaLanne, who was, you know, then at the time running the place, he stayed on as an executive until a critical date, 1917.
Ah, yes. And here we arrive at the birthday of the Lincoln Motor Company.
Mm-hmm.
This was founded by Henry LaLanne along with his son, Wilfred, right?
Yeah, Wilfred.
And LaLanne named this company after one of his favorite presidents. Spoiler alert, it was Abraham Lincoln. And LaLanne according to the story, even cast a vote for Lincoln. So that's how far back this goes.
You know, I had always heard this, that it was named for Abraham Lincoln. And I thought, no, it's
too cut and dry.
It just doesn't seem like that's possible. But it's true. This Henry LaLand, he did vote for Lincoln. I forget what year it was. Would that be 1864? I think that would be.
I think you're right.
So because he was born, LaLand was born in 1843 in Vermont, so he's an American citizen. That's just so strange to think of him dropping a vote in the ballot box for Abraham Lincoln in 1864. Yeah. I don't know why that's unusual, but this guy lived until 1932, so he was old when he passed away in Detroit, this LaLand character. And, you know, at this point, he's here with his son. He's just come off of being, you know, having a company that was purchased from him by General Motors, this Cadillac Motor Company, automobile company, for $4.5 million.
So he's not hurting for money.
He's flush with cash at this point.
But again, like Henry Ford, we get the distinct implication that LaLand would rather be his own man, would rather own his own stuff. And Lincoln Motor Company, a little bit of trivia for some people here. Lincoln Motor Company was not originally founded to build cars.
Yeah, well, maybe that was the intent later on. I think that they did have the intent that they were going to do that.
They were planning to build it later on, but their first product was aircraft engines.
Yeah, that's right. You know, you're right, and maybe I'm reading too much into the story.
I think you're right, because clearly it's a motor company. Well, cars were motors at.
This is a car guy. I mean, he's been in the car business now for some time, you know, more than a couple of decades at this point. So he was interested in cars, to be sure. But you're right. The first product that the Lincoln Motor Company put out was actually engines for aircraft, for Liberty aircraft that were assembled, really, at the Lincoln factory. The cylinders were produced by the Ford Motor Company. And again, these are World War I aircraft engines that they're building at this factory. And that's their first source of income, their first revenue generating job, I guess.
And this also, Scott, we should point out that manufacturing, again, I feel like we say this every time we deal with cars and wars, manufacturers were doing this on a frequent basis, because when a war effort kicked in, then the manufacturing base of not only the United States but Europe as well would shift to focus on military hardware. Now, I think I owe you a little bit of an apology, Scott, because clearly the Lincoln Motor Company was made to make cars. They made a quick buck off the aircraft engines, but in 1920, they already made their first car.
Yeah, they were making cars by 1920, and I want to get to that in just one second, but I do really feel like we need to just take a moment here and really talk about Henry LaLand and, you know, who he was, where he comes from. I think that plays a big role in this entire story, and it'll kind of maybe give a more of a clear idea to our listeners that this was a car guy through and through, really.
Let's paint a picture.
Yeah, how about that? So he's an American-born machinist, engineer, inventor, automotive entrepreneur, as he's described here. He was born in Vermont in 1843. I think we mentioned that.
Yeah.
He lived all the way until 1932, so he was aged 89 when he passed away.
It's a good life.
He was as we mentioned already, the founder of Cadillac and of Lincoln, the Lincoln Motor Company. That's not letting any secrets out at this point. We've already told you.
Yep.
So, you know, two luxury marks that are still known today, well known today, that compete in the marketplace today. Kind of interesting there. I think that, you know, he founded two companies that eventually compete against each other. We actually competed right from the very beginning, as they were both around. He learned engineering, precision machining, to the point where he was able to work for a firearms company. He worked for Colt for a while prior to doing all this other stuff with the automotive industry and forming all these companies. And these guys always have their hands in a lot of different things, don't they?
Yes.
Very interesting stories for all of these guys, as you'll find out. Now, by 1870, I think they said, he was already interested in what was known as the automotive industry, which, as you know, wasn't really the automotive industry at that point. It was really just motors. People were kind of tinkering with motors, as was Henry Ford.
Yeah, it's always fascinating to think about that period in time, because it was it's strange when you think about how in the modern age now people have talked about DIY stuff as though it's a thing that people are rediscovering. Mm-hmm. But that's how the car industry started. It really did start with some very, very, very smart people saying, how could I make this do something useful?
Literally building a car engine on your kitchen table, out in the garage, wherever it happened to be, and then putting it into whatever vehicle that you had on hand, which would be a carriage.
Break 90% of the time.
Exactly. There was so much R&D that went into these things. It was amazing. I'm sure that, you know, now by 1870, as a machinist, as an engineer, mm-hmm. inventor, he was already, you know, I'm sure he was working on his own type of engines. And we said he developed an engine for Oldsmobile, right?
Yeah. So a competitor engine to Ford's.
Exactly. So, you know, a couple other things of interest here before we move on, because he's still around, this Henry Leland guy, when we get to the 1920s. But, he also, this is just a side note here. I see a note in one place that says he invented electric barber clippers. I don't know if that's true or not, but I did find some information that supported that he invented a kid's toy. It was a train model, model train rather, that was kind of a hanging monorail type thing.
Oh, cool.
And you can buy these. You can find these still. They're called the Leland Detroit Monorail, and they're very, very cool looking, of course, obviously vintage or antique toys. You know, a dealer might have something like this, and I'm sure they're expensive, but it's really just a kind of an interesting thing. If you want to look it up, it's called the Leland Detroit Monorail, and you can find a bunch of these around. You know, collectors mm-hmm. have them. They're on sale, you know, antique shops, things like that. So I think we were in the 1920s, right?
Yes. So in the 1920s, 1920 on the nose, the first Lincoln car is introduced. It is the L series. Mm-hmm. And the L series, now, Scott, I want to say this diplomatically.
Yeah, be delicate.
You know what? Let's just be candid. Didn't do well enough to help the company.
Okay. It wasn't up to the standards of what we would think of a luxury automaker would create.
Yeah, it's not what we would associate a Lincoln car with today. The L series just did not perform, and this led to some disastrous things at the Lincoln Motor Company.
Yeah, and the thing is, you know, this is early on in the history of the company. I remember they were, you know, this is a tough time for a company because, you know, they're coming off of, you know, having all this work during World War I with the aircraft engines and everything, mm-hmm. and now they're to doing what they truly wanted to do when they formed and to build these luxury automobiles, and they're having a hard time of it.
And someone came riding to the rescue, but before we talk about that, Scott, I wanted to take a little moment and talk about something different.
Yeah, why not?
Okay, so, you know, it's that time of year when people like to travel, go see some loved ones.
Sure.
The weather's nice.
I travel all the time.
You travel all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe just hop in the car and go on some spontaneous road trip, which is one of my favorite things to do.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to recommend an audiobook.
Oh, what have you got?
I have a book that dovetails nicely with our story of Lincoln today. It is called Driven, Inside BMW, the Most Admired Car Company in the World. That's part of the title. That's not me.
Oh, luxury manufacturer.
Uh-huh. Hmm. This audiobook is an exclusive look at one of the world's most successful, controversial companies and the mysterious family behind it.
Ooh. Oh, yeah. Good one.
So the guy who is writing this is a guy named David Kiley, K-I-L-E-Y. Maybe I'm mispronouncing that. Detroit bureau chief at USA Today. He's the author of Getting the Bugs Out, which covered the Volkswagen demise and rebirth. So he goes into the BMW automaker to see how they do what they do so well. And this is, for anybody who enjoys hearing the history of a company, for anybody who enjoys gathering bits of obscure knowledge about a company.
Exactly what we're doing today.
Kind of exactly this guy. Anyhow, this is available on audiblepodcast.com, and you can listen to it today. It is 13 hours and 41 minutes long. So if you listen to it today, you'll be listening to it for several days.
And the good news is that if you do choose to download this book that Ben suggested, what's it called? What was it? Driven?
Driven, yeah. Inside BMW.
If you want to learn about BMW and the history of BMW, you can get a free audio download of your choice when you sign up today. And all you have to do is go to audiblepodcast.com/carstuff. And again, you get a free audio book of your choice. And I know a lot of these books, Ben, some of these are kind of expensive. Some of them are, you know, $27, $28,
yeah,
you know, for
yeah.
non-members.
Mm-hmm.
This is a bargain. If you're a Car Stuff listener, it's not like, you know, this is just kind of a throwaway giveaway thing.
Yeah.
It's the real thing. You're getting a pretty good deal to be able to do this. And again, you don't have to choose the one that Ben selected here.
My heart will go on if you don't.
And we've suggested many of them in the past if you want to go back and check those archives. But, man, there's over 100,000 titles to choose from. So, you know, you can download them to your iPod, your MP3 player, whatever device you usually listen to something like this through. And, it's a really good deal.
And speaking of really good deals, the Ford Motor Company acquired Lincoln for $8 million.
Yeah, I'm laughing because this, can you imagine what Henry Ford was thinking when he said, you know what, here's my opportunity.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm going to swoop in and I'm going to take over this company.
That's like Count of Monte Cristo level revenge.
This is, I mean, I bet I can just picture. Now, I honestly picture this, like, you know, almost like Mr. Burns rubbing his hands together at the windowsill, you know, like, my day has come, you know, that kind of thing. You know, that's
excellent.
Exactly. Yeah, that's exactly the way I picture this going down. And I don't think that's terribly too far off. I mean, this is a huge win personally for Henry Ford. You know, following this 1902 situation with LeLand and the Cadillac Company, which, you know, then became a competitor to Ford, which, you know, just added insult to the injury.
Mm-hmm.
I can just imagine Henry Ford, he had to have been so excited to be able to do this, and it must have been so satisfying for him, because he bought it for $8 million.
Yeah.
And this is in, what, 1922?
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, look at that. I have the calculation. I have the inflation calculator here. So,
all right.
In 2013 dollars, that amounts to about $111 million. So, again, it's a fairly large sum. However, he was getting a luxury brand for his company. I mean, something that Ford didn't have at this point. And I think there's a whole lot of information that we need to cover why they would be interested in acquiring the Lincoln brand,
mm-hmm.
Because it was counterintuitive to what Henry was doing already with the Model T.
Right, which, just so everybody knows, of course, the Model T was built to be the first affordable car.
Yeah, I mean, how else do you think Henry had, you know, what was it, $8 million to throw around in 1922? He was doing very, very well for himself with the success of the Model T brand. And, you know, there's, oh my gosh, Ben, there's so much more to this story that I think we've reached a point where maybe this is a good jumping off point for part one.
Okay.
Because we've talked about, you know, Lincoln up to this point. We've hit on the founders, all the players involved at this point.
Mm-hmm.
We've gotten up to the point where, you know, Lincoln has been sold to Ford. And where does it go from there? I mean, we've got...
What's the next turn?
Exactly. What's the next turn in the story? And there are some twists and turns in this and some interesting ones. And,
I mean, this might be a three-parter, to be honest with you. There's a lot of stuff.
Well, it could be. I'm thinking maybe two, maybe three. We'll see.
We'll see
how it goes. But, you know, there's some really good stuff, modern-day stuff about Lincoln that I want to talk about later.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's this whole thing with Edsel that's going to come up.
Yeah.
I promise part two is going to be exciting with Edsel because he's got his own direction, his own focus in mind.
Well, let's end then really quickly on one, maybe a cliffhanger or a good note. You know, we'd like to end on a good note. So
yeah, sure.
I'm on a good note, and then I'll go into some listener mail.
Okay.
So after Ford took over the Lincoln Motor Company, they reduced prices, they changed the bodywork, and sales increased to over 5,000 vehicles from March to December of 1922.
Not bad.
So as soon as they got in there, they started shaking things up.
So there were some improvements.
There were some improvements.
And I'll tell you, it wasn't all Henry.
It wasn't all Henry.
No. Okay.
It's part two.
Fair enough.
It's part two stuff. Do you want to do listener mail?
I do.
Great. Scott, I owe you an apology. I misspoke.
What's that? What are you talking about?
Well, Steve Reed wrote to us from North Carolina. Mm-hmm. Great guy. Says, "Hi, guys. Love your show. I need to point out a small microscopic thing."
Oh, I remember this now.
I thought this was so clever, and he's very nice about it. "I'm sure I'm not the first to email you about this." You were. "But in the Bare Metal Cars Part 2 episode, Ben says 1/1,000,000th of an inch is a micron. Micron is actually short for micrometer, or 1/1,000,000th of a meter. I'm not sure what 1/1,000,000th of an inch is called, but it's not a micron. But I bet you've already cleared that up in a more recent episode, which I will be listening to soon. Thanks, have a great day. Steve, I really appreciate it. I did misspeak on... You know, Scott, you and I do try to have this be a conversational show, so we don't like to stop over and over and get stuff wrong. But I definitely botched that one. Micron, ladies and gentlemen, is short for micrometer. Steve is correct, and this is the episode where we're clearing it up, Steve. So thanks so much for listening, and hope you enjoy the Bare Metal Cars, despite my egregious sins against measurement.
Ben, don't feel too bad. That was it was easy enough. I mean, when we talk and we just, it's kind of like we're just having a conversation over a table here. Mm-hmm. Our notes happen to be in between us.
Which is how I prefer to have conversations.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I like to be prepared, I guess, right? But really, I mean, I didn't even catch it when you were saying it, so I doubt if a lot of listeners even heard it the first time through. Don't be too hard on yourself. That was a very good catch, though, isn't it, Stephen?
Yeah, good ear, Steve.
Stephen, yeah. And again, I don't know what 1/1,000,000th of an inch would be, but I think you're getting down to the nanoscale at that point. Very, very small.
Well, I love that he said it was a microscopic thing, microscopic correction there.
Very tiny error. I wouldn't worry about it.
Well, I appreciate your time, Steve. Thank you for listening. To everybody else out there listening, we hope that you are enjoying our first part, or the end of our first part of our episode on the Lincoln Motor Company. We do promise there's at least one more episode coming up. I know we've got a lot of backstory, but we're going to take it back to the future when we talk to you next time. In the meanwhile, you can drop a line for us on Facebook, maybe a topic suggestion on Twitter, or if you'd like to write in to us, just like Steve and multitudes of other listeners have done, send us an email. We're approachable.
Sure, and you can do that on your computer at carstuff@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.